In the name of the Father, and of the Son, and of the Holy Spirit. I congratulate you all on our patronal feast. And also, it's the 21st anniversary of our parish coming to existence because the very first liturgy we had as a parish was the celebration of our patronal feast. I've told many of you, but many of you probably haven't heard, how it came to be that we wound up with St. Jonah as our patron. I get asked that question from time to time. And before we even had serious thoughts of having a mission, out of the blue, because I'd not corresponded with him a lot, then Father Luke, now Bishop Luke of Jordanville, sent me a letter in the mail with a photograph of St. Jonah and some information about his life. And I thought, well, that's kind of interesting. He did know that I was interested in the history of Orthodoxy in China, so I'm sure that's why he sent it. But that put St. Jonah on the radar screen. And then when then-Bishop Gabriel of Manhattan, now Archbishop Gabriel of Montreal, gave us a blessing to start a mission, I asked him what we should name the parish, and he said, well, you can decide that, but I would like you to pick a saint that was recently glorified. And St. Jonah was glorified in 1996. We were given the blessing in 1998, and so therefore he was fairly recently glorified. But we came up with three possible saints that fit the bill that the bishop had given us, and I had my spiritual father put the three names underneath the antimens before he celebrated a liturgy. I've been told that this is a custom to decide matters. And so he put the names under the antimens before a liturgy, and he pulled one name out, and that name was St. Jonah. And when I informed Bishop Gabriel, he said that was the one that I was hoping for. And that was also the one that I was hoping for myself. So we're blessed to have a great saint. St. Jonah was born in Kaluga in 1888, which Kaluga's southwest of Moscow, not too far. When I visited Optina this year, I saw signs that were saying Kaluga this way. So I then realized, oh, so that's how St. Jonah wound up with the connection with the Optina Monastery, but we'll get to that. But he was an orphan who was taken in by a kindly deacon in Kaluga who raised him. And then he went on to go to the local seminary and then to the Kazan Theological Academy, where he did very well. He was tonsured as a monk attached to the Optina Brotherhood, and he became a professor of New Testament at the academy, a position which he only accepted reluctantly, but he did so in obedience to his spiritual father, the righteous Elder Gabriel. In 1918, the Bolshevik Revolution forced him to leave the seminary. He was arrested by the communists, and he suffered beatings to the point of the loss of consciousness, and he was imprisoned. And it was only by God's providence that the White Army liberated that prison, and he wound up becoming a chaplain in that branch of the White Army during the Russian Civil War. But as you know, the Russian Civil War didn't go the way that the White Army had hoped, or those that had better hopes for Russia. The communists prevailed, and the part of the White Army that St. Jonah was with ended up retreating into China, and they crossed the Gobi Desert. It was a very perilous journey. They had to go through mountains, and they were without supplies. There was no logistical support. And they finally, this tattered army, made their way into China and into Beijing, where St. Jonah came into contact with the Russian ecclesiastical mission in China and was soon made a bishop. He was made a bishop technically of the city of Hankou, which is quite a ways away from where he actually served. And I don't know exactly what the reasoning was, but I suspect that that was already a diocese that had been previously established, and probably with the disruption between communications with the church inside of Russia, they didn't feel like they could just establish one on their own, so they gave him that title. But he actually ministered in the town of what's in China, modern-day Manzhouli. And this gets to some of the confusion about what it means when we call him St. Jonah of Manchuria, because Manchuria is a region in China. But this town, Manjoli, the Russians called it Manchuria, which is the Russian word for Manchuria. He's called St. Joan of Manchuria not because he ministered to that entire region, but because he was in that particular town. This town is on one of the most important rail lines from Russia into China, and I read that it's the largest port of entry that's land-based in China today. So it's a very important railroad, and you had all these Russian refugees that came across the border. This town's only 4 miles across the border, and most of them had just the clothes on their backs. And in those days, they didn't have international relief agencies like we do today. Today, the Red Cross and the United Nations would have been out there, and they'd have put these people in a tent city, and they'd have had sanitation, and they'd have had plenty of food until other arrangements could be made for them. But these people had nothing. And St. Jonah, when he came there in 1922, he found this disorganized community. When the local church would have services, very few people would even come, and people were living from hand to mouth. Many people were starving. And immediately, he effected a huge amount of change. He established an orphanage that held up to 30 children. And he established a school that had as many as 500 students at any given time. He established a dining hall for the poor that fed 200 people a day. He established medical care, free ambulatory service for those that couldn't afford it. And he also set up a spiritual library. And immediately the community came to life, and people were helping each other out. The poor were being taken care of. And he spent quite a bit of his time trying to come up with the resources that he needed. He went to the local railroad and talked them into giving him a stipend of $600 a month, which back in those days went a little bit further, but still not a huge amount of money. But he often went to Harbin, where you had a much larger Russian community, and he made appeals to the Russians there, some of whom had been in China before all of this had happened and were in better financial shape and were in a better position to help. Harbin is not particularly close to Manjoli. I think it's close to 600 miles away, but he actually would travel there and teach classes at the Polytechnical Institute in exchange for railroad carloads of coal so that he could keep his orphans warm in the winter. And he taught religious classes in the school, and he also was a great preacher, and people, when they listened to him speak, were in rapt attention. Every fall on the Feast of the Protection, he would send out carts throughout the city of Manjoli and ask for people to donate food and clothing and blankets, whatever they could, to help the orphans get through the winter. And he was very attentive to the needs of the orphans because he had been one himself. And he didn't just provide for their bare material existence, and he didn't just provide for them spiritually, but he also went to great efforts to make sure that they were able to have some fun and recreation. And in his life, there's a very detailed account of the lengths that he went to so that every summer they could go out into the country to a camp that was by a lake because he wanted them to have some fun. But after 3 years, his death came unexpectedly. He had been caring for a priest who went on to die of typhoid fever, and he became ill himself. And as a result of complications, he developed blood poisoning. And then the Feast of the Protection came. It was time for the fall drive, and he was urged to just cancel it, but he refused. And barely able to stand, looking out the window from his study, he blessed each cart, and when they returned, he wanted to hear what they were able to bring. The archbishop from Harbin came. They were doing malevolence, and the orphans were praying, "Dear God, please don't take away our Vladika." Finally, the doctors told St. Jonah that he should take advantage of the presence of the archbishop and receive the sacraments because he did not have long to live. And he did so, and then we're told that he put on the upper tachelion and the cuffs that had belonged to St. Ambrose of Optina. And he began loudly and with prostrations to perform the canon for the departure of the soul of St. Andrew of Crete. He asked to be buried in his white vestment, simply without pomp. And then he finally laid down and he said, "God's will be done, now I will die." And he was given a cross and a candle to hold while he died within minutes, surrounded by many of his close friends and the clergy. At his funeral, this town, which at that time had about 10,000 people, had about 8,000 people who came to the funeral. So loved was he by everyone, not just the Orthodox. But as if to send a message that this wasn't the end, that very night when he died, there was a boy who had been suffering from paralysis. He was crippled and he had inflammation of the knee joints, and to straighten out his legs it caused unbearable pain. And he couldn't stand, much less walk. And he had a dream of a bishop in white who said, "Here, take my legs. I don't need them anymore. And give me yours." And he woke up and he was healed. And then later he recognized from a picture that that was St. Jonah, that he saw the dream. And that dream happened the very night that St. Jonah reposed. What do we see when we look at the life of St. Jonah? He dedicated himself to serve God, and he served God in whatever situation he was, the best that he was able to do. He was dedicated to the education of clergy, to his own spiritual life, monasticism, so he had a foundation from which to teach. When his country was in peril, he fought for it. When that fight was lost, he then struggled to minister to the many refugees in the wake of that national catastrophe. In every situation, he dedicated himself 100% to do whatever he could to minister to those that were around them, and he left an impression far deeper than his short life of 37 years or his 3 years of ministry as a bishop would suggest. In the wisdom of Solomon, we hear these words, which I think were fulfilled in St. Jonah's life. "He being made perfect in a short time, fulfilled a long time. His soul pleased the Lord, therefore hasted he to take him away from among the wicked." Amen.